Yeah, I actually don't know exactly what word he uses for it. I mean, you can use the word instantiation as long as you kind of keep in mind that it means something else than it does on the Aristotelian view, right? So you can say that this instantiates black. What you say that you're just saying that this
So
thing here
there
is a
must
bundle where black is one of them. So
So there must be an instantiation for a concept to exist.
right, yeah,
Sure.
sure, yeah,
For a universe to exist. Okay.
yeah. And if you, again, unless you're a Platonist about these things, you're going to think that only the universals that are instantiated at some point in time, either past, present, or future, are going to exist, right? So that's what Armstrong thinks, at least. So of course, if you're a Platonist, you don't have to say that because these universals are outside of the empirical world, right? But if you think that universals only exist insofar as they're instantiated, well, you have to say that they only, I mean, if a universal is never instantiated, past, present, or future, then it doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
That's, so, yeah. All right. Yep.
See? All right, so I'm going to crack on. Right, so yesterday I presented to you search algorithms over this language, planning language, PDDL, for constructing plans. And there were two types. There was one that did a kind of state space search, and another that searched the plan space and incrementally constructed a partial description of a plan. In a kind of least commitment strategy approach. So not committing to exactly when you'd perform an action unless you absolutely had to. Those search algorithms are designed for classical planning. That is where you're in a fully observable environment and actions never ever go wrong, which of course is nothing like the real world. So what I'm gonna do now is on Tuesday as well, is gradually relax those assumptions, those idealized assumptions that we know everything, the agent knows absolutely everything there is to know about the state it's in, and that actions never go wrong. And I'm going to be relaxing those constraints very gradually. And because I'm relaxing them very gradually, and in particular, I'm not going to be assuming, at least at this point, that there are an unbounded number of ways in which things can go wrong, I can stay qualitative, okay? I'm going to stay within the symbolic environment for the next two lectures. But ultimately, we are going to go probabilistic, okay? So that we are measuring likelihood of things, and we will then be quantifying our preferences through utility functions and choosing to act according to some optimal trade-off between the extent to which we want to make a state true and the likelihood that a given action will put us in that state. And that's decision theory. But anyway, for today, all I'm going to do is start relaxing some of these assumptions about being fully observable and actions having fully deterministic states. Okay, so in the unbounded case, right, if an action, if you can't specify all the ways, all the reasons why an action might go wrong, then that's like the qualification problem, okay, that I think Jacques spoke to you about a few weeks ago. All right, so there are many ways of handling indeterminacy in planning, and which one you use depends a little bit on the planning problem you're dealing with and the kind of agent you're dealing with. Has it got a camera? Has it got loudspeakers, you know, and things like that? Has it got a microphone to pick up sound? So imagine that you're a robot Hoover with no sensors whatsoever for dirt. And your goal is to clean the house. What would you do? There are three rooms in this house, but you can't sense dirt, but you want a clean house. What actions would you perform? You'd clean the house, right? So you'd even clean a room if it were clean. It's a belts and braces approach to planning, in which you are potentially doing actions you don't have to do, but you don't know for sure you don't have to do them, so you do them just in case. It's a very conservative approach, okay? That is conformant planning, essentially, okay? You achieve the goal through a sequence of actions that, regardless of what kind of contingencies might happen, you are guaranteed it's going to get you to the goal. Contingency planning, on the other hand, is really cool for non-deterministic environments if you do have some sensors. Now imagine that you are a Hoover who can't sense the dirt in every room, right? It's partially observable in that you can only see the room you're in and sense whether there's dirt in that room. Then what would you do to clean the house? Sorry? Find a dirty place and clean it, right? So you're using sensing actions there. Right, I'm in this room, do I sense dirt? Yes, then I suck, clean it and go to the next room. Do I not sense dirt? Is it clean? If it's clean, I don't bother cleaning it and I go to the next room, right? So I'm using sensing actions as well as my cleaning actions in that plan, okay? So that's contingency planning, so called because what you do depends on what you sense, okay? And then this final example, online planning or replanning, is really good when unforeseen things can go wrong and you can end up, you've got sensors, but you're in a planning situation where your actions can go wrong in unbounded ways. And so you could end up in a state that you never anticipated when you constructed your initial plan. Okay, so with contingency planning, you construct the plan right from the start for the whole action sequence, and you don't deviate from it, right? It's just got if-then-else statements in it, essentially. If I sense this, then do that, otherwise do that. But you construct the whole plan right from the start, from your initial state. You can't do that If there are, if you can't anticipate what states you might be in, because you'd have an unbounded number of if-then-else statements. I mean, you can't write it down. In that situation, you've got to keep planning and repair a plan should you find yourself in some surprising state that you never anticipated. Then you're going to have the reasoning mechanisms that help you get from that state back towards the goal state, right? So that's online planning or replanning. And they're suitable for different kinds of agents and planners. So that first one, if you don't have senses, that's basically what you've got to do if you want to guarantee a goal state. Contingency planning is good if you've got senses and bounded effects, non-deterministic effects on your actions, but they're bounded, and replanning when they're unbounded, okay, non-deterministic actions. So here's an example problem where we want the table and chair to be the same color, and we can make them the same color by painting them. Okay, so we've got some cans of paint and we can paint them. But because I don't have any eyes, I don't know what color my cans of paint are. I know I've got two cans of paint and I know I've got a table and a chair, but I don't know the colors of the cans of paint. Imagine they're shut, right? Shut cans, right? And our goal state is, I want the chair and table to be the same color. I don't care which color. I don't care if it's blue or red or green, but I want them to be the same color. Now, we can look at things and thereby learn what color they are, and we can open cans and we can paint, okay? So here are the actions then that I can perform. I can remove the lid from a can. And the precondition of that is simply that it's a can. And the effect is it's open. Arguably, I should have a not open in there as well. But Russell and Norvig didn't put it in, so I didn't either in the preconditions. I can paint an object using a can of paint. So here's my object X. I've got my can of paint. And that can of paint is some color C, which I've specified in the preconditions. Why? Because I have to specify the effect of painting that object is that it is that color, the color of the paint in the can. Right? The can's got to be open for me to use it to paint something. Okay, that's why open of can is there in the preconditions as well. Notice that this is a slightly extended version of the PDDL language in that we've got variables here in the preconditions that aren't specified as parameters in the action name, which is allowed in this fragment of PDDL. And then finally, I can look at things. So to look at an object, I've got to be looking elsewhere before I perform this action, and the effect of looking at it is that I'm essentially, it's in view, right? That object X is in view. And the object Y that I was looking at, that was in view, is no longer in view, okay? So through this action, if I've got senses, if I've got eyes, I will be able to perceive its color. Those are effects are captured through what are known as percept schema, okay? This is saying, if I've got an object X in view, then I know its color. That's essentially what this is saying, right? So they're slightly different from actions in that they don't change the world. They change what's in my head, right? The things I believe. And if I open a can and the can is in view, then I know the color of the paint in that can, okay? So these are percept schema. Now, a fully observable environment has a percept axiom for every fluent in the environment, essentially, right? So the fully observable environment is a special case now of this kind of language where we've got action schemata and percept schemata. And a senseless planner, on the other hand, has no percept schemata. So it can perform this action of looking at something, but it won't see. It won't change its beliefs because it can't perceive color. It can't perceive what it's looking at. Okay? Right, so let's think about how you colour the table and chair if you're a sensorless planner, in other words, no camera. Okay? Then what would you have to do? Well, you'd have to open a can of paint and both paint them both with that paint. Right? That would be the sensorless plan for doing it. For contingency planning, though, you could do better than this because, I mean, imagine a situation where you've got a chair and a table, and the chair is red and the table is green, and you've got a can of red paint. If you can see, then through contingency planning, you could get away with painting only one of the objects and not both of them. Okay? So there are more efficient plans to be had if you've got some senses. And that's what contingency planning allows you to achieve, because with contingency planning, you can plan in those sensing actions to learn what you've got to learn to perform the most effective action. So here's the contingency plan. It's, you know, just using common sense, this is what the plan would be. You look at the table and chair and you sense their colors. If they're the same, you're done. So that's the most efficient plan of all, right? It's basically do nothing. You're in the goal state. If not, look at the paint cans. If one of the cans is the same color as one of the pieces of furniture, apply the paint to the other piece. If not, paint both pieces. So it's basically action of last resort here is equivalent to the sensorless plan here. So you'll never do worse than the sensorless plan and may well do better. The best case scenario being do nothing, essentially. You don't paint at all. So let's look at these in more detail now. So we're imagining a situation here. Right, I'm going to start sort of formalizing these ideas now with contingency planning. So imagine I'm a Hoover, okay? And I'm in, there are two rooms, a left-hand room and a right-hand room at L and at R. And I can sense whether the room I'm in is clean or not, but I can't sense what's going on in the room I'm not in. Then, given that I'm in room L, I could sense it's clean, but I don't know about the cleanliness of the other room, right? So there are two possible states that satisfy my belief state. And there's one in which that room is clean, one in which it's dirty. Okay? So you can think of my belief state as a set of states, or equivalently, my belief is a partial description of states. And if I don't know the cleanliness of the room, of room R, then that partial description satisfied regardless of the truth value of clean R. Now, you could represent belief states like this as sets of states, but it would be massive, especially if I'm ignorant. Right? If I'm ignorant about everything, I have no beliefs about anything, about whether they're true. I don't believe they're true. I don't believe they're false. I just don't know, right? I am ignorant. Then I'm going to have, suppose there are n literals, I'm going to have 2 to the n states that I would need to describe my belief state. Okay? 2 to the n because you'd need every combination of every literal and its negation. In a fully ignorant state. So that's kind of really fat and horrible to deal with. Don't want to deal with that. Whereas if you use logical sentences with an open wild assumption, you can avoid that, right? So if I express my belief state just as a conjunction of positive and negative literals, then this state I'm in where I'm in the left-hand room and I know it's clean, but I don't know anything about the right-hand room, could be expressed just by this partial description here. And the fact that I'm not saying anything about whether the room R is clean or not is not saying it's not clean. It's saying I don't believe it's clean. I don't believe it's not clean. Okay? Now, having this kind of partial description of a conjunction of literals be the way you represent beliefs is not going to allow you to represent certain kinds of beliefs I might have. So I may know there are oranges or lemons in that basket, but I don't know which, for example. I can't express disjunctions with this. And actually, for some planning scenarios, that's really important, because suppose I know there are oranges or lemons in the basket, and then I put oranges in the basket. I don't want to conclude from that there are not lemons in there, right? And unless I can express that disjunction at the start, you know, and not have it as a state of ignorance, you're in danger of doing that. But nevertheless, there's quite a lot you can do with this rather impoverished way of specifying beliefs, just as conjunctions of literals. An alternative is that we have some kind of modal operator working over literals, telling us what we know and what we don't know. So if I know I'm in room R, then I say I qualify it with this K operator. If I know the room is clean, I qualify it with the K operator. Or similarly for their negation. And then we can have a closed world assumption on this. So if I don't have something qualified with a K operator, that means I don't know it. What we're going to use is this second option here. Okay? So our belief states are going to be these particular kinds of partial descriptions of states, given as conjunctions of literals, both positive and negative. All right? So with sensorless planning, then, back to the table and chair, and wanting to paint them the same color, the unchanging facts are I've got two cans of paints and two objects. What might change is the color of the objects. And I know they have a color, but I just don't know which, right? So after scholemization, my initial belief state is that for each object X, it has some color. I don't know what it is, but I'm scholemizing over that X, right? So C of X will be different. The color will be different for potentially different for the table and chair, although it might be the same. So that's my initial belief state about color. And I'm just not going to talk about the belief state that there is a chair, there is a table and stuff, because they're not fluent. They're true. Okay, now look at this plan where I remove the lid of paint C1 and I paint the chair and the table with it, and see how I can guarantee that plan will work in spite of the fact that I can't see. Okay, and the way you do that is through belief update. At each point, after each action, you recompute, given your initial beliefs, given the effects of the action you've just performed, what do you believe now, right? You update your belief set, basically, using this function. So if I'm in a belief state B and I perform an action A, then the resulting belief state, B prime, is those sets of states that result from any state that's satisfied by my initial belief state in which I perform that action, right? So it means that if the action adds some literal L, L's going to be in B prime. If it deletes it, then not L is going to be in B prime. And if the action says nothing about L, it retains whatever its B value was here. And if there were no B values, you know, if your belief said nothing about L, it still says nothing about L. Okay. So I start with my two objects. Right, I've got objects and they've got some color and I don't know what it is. And I remove the lid of the paint. Now the effect of removing C1, the lid of C1, if you remember, where are we? Oh God. Was that that kit can C1 will be open, yeah? So I've got to add that to my updated belief set. There it is, okay? The color's not changed because removing the lid doesn't affect the color of any object. But now, when I paint the chair, since chair can unify with X, and C1 can unify with the color, X can, this is wrong, X can unify with the chair and C with the color of C1, right? I end up with these conditions here, okay? And my can is still open, and I still don't know the color of other stuff, other than my chair, which now I've got more specific information. It's whatever the color of C1 is, okay? Now I paint the table, and it has a similar effect. I've got now more specific information about the color of the table, namely it's whatever the color of C1 is. And those are the same, right? Those are constants now, and they're the same. So I've achieved my goal state, okay? So basically with senseless planning, what you do is you construct a sequence of actions where, according to this definition of belief update, every state that is satisfied by your partial beliefs is satisfied, is a goal state. All right, so that's where actions don't go wrong, but we're in a partially observable environment. Now let's imagine a situation where, we don't know, actions go wrong, things happen, the unexpected sometimes happens, okay? So in that situation, I can't, it becomes harder to update your belief state because you're not absolutely sure what the effects of the action are going to be. But we're going to look, and that's where probability really comes into its own, but we're going to consider a simple way in which actions can be non-deterministic, in that there are only a very small number of different outcomes that any given action might have. And we're going to reason about those. Okay, so in other words, we're going to express the effects of actions potentially as conditionals or as disjunctions. So here's a particular example. Suppose I have an action of going left, which doesn't always work. To perform it, I've got to be in the right-hand room, but for whatever reason, I might not end up in the left-hand room. I might just stay where I am. Maybe my battery is flat, or, maybe I tripped over a cable. It doesn't matter what made the thing go wrong. It might go wrong. And so its effect may be no effect, right? You can express that with a disjunction, as I've done here. Here's an example of another way in which an action might be non-deterministic. Suppose I'm a Hoover and I suck to clean the floor. Then if I'm in room L, the result of that is that that room is clean. If I'm in room the right-hand room, the result is that that's clean. I don't know which room's clean if I don't know which room I'm in when I do the sucking action, right? And here is an example that's a combination of disjunctions and these conditional effects, as they're called, right? So the conditional effects, what they're doing is they're saying, when a certain thing holds of the state, then this is the effect, right? So if at L is true, then the effect is clean L. If at R is true, then the effect is clean R. So you read them as conditionals, essentially. Here's an example of turning left, which uses a combination of disjunction and conditionals. So to turn left, I've got to be in the to go left, I've got to be in the right-hand room. But the results of that action, all sorts of stuff can go wrong. I may succeed and I end up in the right-hand room, or I may end up in the left-hand room, sorry, or I may end up in the left-hand room, but I also deposit dirt at my destination. Right? Maybe I've got muddy wheels or something. So that's expressed here by this. Maybe I do, maybe I don't, right? So this is the maybe I don't deposit dirt disjunct. This one is maybe I do deposit dirt. So if the room was clean, it ain't now. Yes.
Why do we have to express this as a condition? Because if the effect were always just to make it dirty, then even if it were dirty, it would still make it dirty, right? So it doesn't seem to be doing any conditional work here.
Yeah, good point. Taken from Russell and Norvig. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what I want to illustrate, so this is redundant, this when thing, but what I want to illustrate with it is that it's not contradictory, because this is essentially an instruction to delete. Okay? So this isn't saying if A then not A, you know, or if P then not P. It's saying if this is true, then the effect is this. So if this is true before the action, this is true after. But you're right, it is redundant to have the when in there. If it's not clean, it's not clean still. At least given the scenario in which I gave. I mean, you could imagine another scenario where it accidentally cleans, it sucks as, I mean, this may be a situation where it sucks if it's clean. Anyway, never mind. Right, okay. And then the conditional steps are, you can have conditional steps in the plan in this situation, right? If, suppose you want to clean the house. So if you're in the left-hand room and it's clean, then go right, else suck, okay? Would be a way of ensuring that you clean that left-hand room. Okay, so the if-then-else statements for the contingent plan that I wrote in English way back here is a bunch of if-then-else statements for the table and chair. So you look at the table, you look at the chair. That will update the belief to tell you what color they are, okay? If the color of the table and chair are the same, right, if we've got this C variable is the same in both, then no op, right? Don't do anything, you're done. Else, you remove the lid of the paint and look at it, and remove the lid of the other paint and look at it. If the color of the chair and the can are the same, then paint the table. Otherwise, if the color of the table and the can are the same, paint the chair. Otherwise, paint them both with C1. I've just chosen C1 arbitrarily. Another plan would be to paint them both with C2. Okay? Notice these variables, you interpret them as existentially quantified here. In this kind of planning language. Okay? Now, this allows you, this kind of contingent planning allows you to plan against nature, right? So it's like adversarial search, if you like. You are constructing conditional plans where you are sensing things and acting. So when you perform an action, nature could intervene and do something horrible to you, right? You know, you can have acts of God that basically, when I switch off that light, an act of God means it didn't work, like, I don't know, I got struck by lightning or something. And so I want to sense, having performed my action, I want to sense what the effects of that action were, because nature could have intervened and done something bizarre, and then react to what I sense and plan for that, okay? So those are games essentially against nature. So in the sense that you have a game tree where the nodes are your beliefs, and when you are acting, when you perform an action, the children to the node you're in are the belief state. The possible effects are determined by the possible effects of the action. And assuming you can sense effects or plan to sense the effects, you'll know which child you've gone down to. But when you are acting, when you're in the initial state, you want to construct the entire plan to achieve your goal state before you act at all, right? So we're not in replanning here. Now, suppose we've got, I'm in this initial state here, right, and where I want to just move over to the left-hand square, that's all, but making sure, so this is my goal state, looks like this. I want the house clean, but right now I'm in the wrong room and I just want to move to the next room. However, I'm a horrible little Hoover, who sometimes deposits dirt where I end up. Okay? Maybe because my wheels are muddy or something. Okay? So just going left won't necessarily work, because going left will leave me in one of two states. One of them is the goal state, but the other one is the state in which I've made that room where I'm heading dirty. And if that happens, I'm going to have to hoover it up, okay, and to get to the goal state. All right? So this is, you can apply essentially minimax to this kind of thing, where this is me playing, this is nature playing, right? This is the contingencies given by nature. This is chance at work, giving me one of these two possible outcomes to the action I performed. And a solution then, a plan that will guarantee getting you to a goal, is a subtree where your node in the subtree is the initial state you're in. And whenever you're at a chance node, that's one of these that has one of these arcs here, the chance node like this, this is nature playing. It includes every child of a chance node, and all the nodes in the subtree are goal nodes. All the leaves of the nodes in the subtree are goal nodes. So you can see, as you follow my line here, that would be a subtree that satisfies that description, right? I'm in my initial state, and when I've got a chance node, as I do here, it contains all the children, and all the leaves look like seven, this state seven, where the Hoover is in the left-hand room, and the whole place is clean. So that's telling you, go left. If it's clean, you're done, right? Else suck. Okay? So you search this space much as you would search a game tree with these rules in mind. Now, that's assuming no cyclic solutions, right? But what happens now in a situation where we have a even more unpredictable Hoover, where if I attempt to move left, it's not just that I might succeed, or I might succeed but deposit dirt at my destination, but also that I might not move at all. In other words, I may end up back in this situation up here. What then, right? How do we deal with that situation? Well, this is going to have a cyclic solution, right? Because I could end up where I started. I'm going to have actions that have no effects. So I'm going to have to loop and try again, okay? And the way you try again is to essentially, the way you express try again or iterate is to have a plan containing potentially if-then-else statements, label it with something, and then use that label to say, and you use that label again, say perform that whole plan again, right? Here it is in action, right? So this is my Hoover now, where when moving left, I may succeed, or I may deposit dirt, or I may not move at all. And I still want to end up in a goal state where the whole house is clean and I'm in this room here. Then the cyclic plan is move left. If I'm still in the right room, then try again, move left, right? Do a whole thing again, L, right? Move left. Else, I am left. And if it's clean, then do nothing, else suck. Okay? So that's a cyclic plan. But it's much, much harder searching for cyclic plans, computationally speaking. Now, there's an alternative way in which things can go wrong, which is where, what we've got here is non-determinism. But I can always sense whether there's dirt where I am. Essentially, I'm able to observe. Now, imagine a situation where the vacuum cleaner can sense cleanliness of the square it's in, but not cleanliness of the other square. And when it moves, it could deposit dirt where it started. Now, if it does that, it won't know it's done that because it's moved to the other room. Okay? right? So we're in this situation where I know I'm in the right-hand room, and I know it's clean because I'm in it. I don't know whether the left-hand room is clean or not. I still want that goal state where I'm in the left-hand room and the whole house is clean. Now imagine a situation where if I move, I might deposit dirt in the room I left. Now if I move left, then if I was in this state, I'd be in this state potentially. Or I might be in this state. Okay, if I was in this state. If I was in this state, then I might be in this state or this state. Yeah? Do you see that? Right? So if the left-hand room was clean and I move left, then if I didn't deposit dirt, that's where I'd be. If I did, that's where I'd be. If I was in this state, so the left-hand room is dirty, then it's still dirty. And what's more, it could be that the other room's now dirty as well. Okay? And I don't know between these two states which one I'm in until I've moved, at least. Right? So I can sense whether the room is left, the left-hand room is clean or not. And so I'll know, so when I move, before I move left, I won't know which of these four I'll be in. But after I've moved, I will, because I can sense the cleanliness of the room I'm in. So I'll either be here or I'll be here. If I'm here, I can simply suck to reach this state. If I'm in this state, then I don't know if there's dirt here. I'm going to have to go check. I'm going to have to move right and see what happens, right? So if I move right and it was clean, I'm actually back in the state I started. If I move right and it wasn't clean, I'm in this state. And I would have to suck to get to that state. I can't achieve the goal state. I can't guarantee with this kind of scenario that I'm in the left-hand room with both rooms clean. I'm just going to be going like this forever, cleaning, moving and cleaning, moving and cleaning. Okay, so in a partially observable world, even if there are relatively few possible effects to an action, it's quite easy to construct a scenario where there is no plan that is guaranteed to get you to the goal, okay, in finite time. So, but anyway, assuming that there are, then you can use and/or search on the belief states to handle it. And in fact, if you're in a fully observable state, as we were here, this is just a special case. Right, this is just a special case of the partially observable state environment where we have more than one possible state that we might be in. So, just to summarize then, what we've seen here are various kinds of planners that you can deploy. And which one you deploy depends on the kind of planning problems you're going to encounter. It depends on whether your agent's got senses. It depends on whether your actions may have non-deterministic effects, and if they do, what kinds of effects they have. Right? Contingent planning is a good way of planning if you've got senses, and you can express the effects of actions using conditionals and disjunctions, essentially. They're bounded effects to them. Okay, because then you can sense what condition you're in after the action has been performed, and so determine the effects and update your belief state accordingly. If you're in a fully observable environment, then basically you can represent the planning space and the belief space, essentially, that is affected by the actions that you might perform as and/or graphs, and use search over and/or graphs to find a plan to get you to the goal. If you're in partially observable environments, then the nodes in that and/or graph are a set of states. So what we're going to do next time is continue planning and acting in the real world, where we will be looking at how you, more intelligent ways, essentially, of decomposing plans, complex plans ones requiring lots and lots of actions into simpler plans, a sort of hierarchical structure of plans. So imagine your plan is to get a degree. It would be really insane to specify that plan as get the bus to King's Cross, get the train to Edinburgh, what do I want to do then? Get a taxi to Old College, fill out a form. I mean, you know, it's just a mad way to do it, the entire plan for the whole 5 years. You don't do it that way, do you? I mean, you just go to Edinburgh, go to your lectures, do your coursework. You know, it's much more coarse-grained. And then when you're thinking about each of those sort of big actions, like do your coursework, think of the sequence of actions you perform when you do an assignment. You divide it down. So that's what we're going to look at next time, because that helps us to construct very complex plans in a large search space. Okay? Right, see you next week. Did Matt not put them up? He said he was going to email the students this afternoon. Did he not do that?
This morning. So.
Oh, they might be up now. Yeah, yeah. They should be up by now. I will check when I get home. Yeah. Okay.
How do you decide then when to terminate? Is it just because of some utility function that decides?
It depends what kind of planner you are. Some planners don't terminate. Others just have some kind of bound on the size of the plan, and you, if you reach it, you just decide, right, this isn't, I can't plan for this. So it depends what their halting conditions are, really, and different plans implement different halting conditions. Yeah. But yes, there's not a guarantee of a plan, you know. So you do need halting conditions, because otherwise your computer's going to crash. Yeah, every plan has got to have it. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. No, maybe next week.
But, I mean, just after that.
talk was like, oh, finally, you guys are going to enjoy that.
Yeah.